Happy Monday, everybody. My name's Larry Jacobs. It is March 7th, 2022. Welcome to today's first show here on Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. We've got another one coming up just a little while later, but this one's going to be especially good. We've got Lori Vanderploeg, who's the Associate Executive Director for Professional Affairs over at the Council for Exceptional Children, and she's brought with him Brad Duncan, who is Director of Professional Standards and Accreditation over at CEC, and it'll be wonderful to start the week this week. We're going to talk about the Ed Prep and special education, teacher accreditation, the teacher shortage, et cetera, and we're going to archive the show at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. Okay, that is our home website for equity and access. Our online journal is there, big cover icon. You can just click on it, read a beautiful magazine online. Again, ace-ed.org. All our podcasts are there, tons of other news, et cetera, and a link to our other website, which is called All About SEL, Social Emotional Learning. It's called SELtoday.org. Okay, so you can check it all out at ace-ed.org. And without further ado, let me bring on the lovely Lori and the less lovely Brad Duncan, I'm sure. Hi, Laura. How you doing?
Hey, good. Yeah. Thank you for having us, Larry.
That's my pleasure. And the less lovely Brad. How are you today, Brad? It's nice to meet you.
Good. Nice to meet you as well.
Thanks, pal. You don't take it seriously that I thought you were less lovely than Lori, do you?
No worries.
No worries. I didn't think so. Okay, good enough. And happy Monday to both of you. Laura, I'm concerned about this. We need more teachers in special education. We've always had that, but it's worse now than ever. What's going on, Lori? Tell us.
Well, that's a big question, Larry, but I want to just kind of start off by talking about what an educator prep program is. And it's
really designed
to prepare both undergrad and graduate students to become licensed teachers. And the scary part is the data is telling us that there's been a decade of decline in enrollment in our institutes of higher ed educator prep programs, and the pandemic only exacerbated that enrollment. And right now, the national data is suggesting we have anywhere between 35 and 38% decline in enrollment across the nation. And, you know, due to that enrollment, we have some of the smaller institutes are actually closing their programs, resulting in a permanent loss. Preparing less students for us to be able to place in our programs when they come out. And these educator prep programs, their role is really to provide the PK-12 schools with qualified educators. And, they're using the CEC standards, which Brad will talk about a little bit more. But not only do we have less coming in, but we don't have really good national data, but it's saying that the completers are declining as well. And that's kind of a result of the pandemic due to the fact that they couldn't complete student teaching, in the virtual environments. Didn't feel that they were going to get their quality preparation that they needed, so that they were kind of withholding from the program until the pandemic lifted. So a little concern whether they're going to come back to us or not.
Laura, has anybody looked at, you said it's over the past decade, and it's been a sharp decline, all right? And of course, the pandemic, that made it worse, okay, which is another question, all right? But what has happened? Just from your point of view, and Brad, feel free to chime in. What do you think has happened? Why have people, if I may, turned away from education or becoming professionals in education? That's step one, okay? I'm just curious on your answer to that, Lori.
Well, some of the research is telling us that the high student debt, coming out of those preparation programs and then going into the local school districts at a low salary. Most of the candidates are really not able to pay back their student loans and live a comfortable life off of the salary, so that's been a little disheartening. A lot of, the negative media coverage has really been a discouraging factor for many of the young candidates to, consider going into education. What's really happening in the schools, certainly the pandemic exacerbated that, lots of negativity toward teachers not meeting student needs. Not being able to do it at the virtual level or a hybrid level. So I think that that plays a role. And most importantly, you know, parents that are educators and teachers that are educators are not really encouraging young students to go into education as their preferred profession. So, you know, the list is numerous, but those are probably some of the top ones.
That's a good thoughts. Brad, do you have any thoughts on that one? The why?
No, everything that – no, I agree with everything that Laurie is saying, and that's what we've seen.
Yeah, it's really scary. I mean, it's really scary. And you know what I find interesting? Teaching was always a great thing for first-generation students to go into.
Right.
All right? And it's, that has been historically across the board, especially with waves of immigrants. They came in, and that first generation out of college, many of them became educators, all right, mm-hmm. and especially women. And, of course, the world's opened up for women. They don't have to become flight attendants, okay? Nothing wrong with those things, by the way, or teachers, okay? They can become literally anything they wanted, okay? And so that vast pool of talent is going into other areas as well. But it's just frightening what's going on out there. And, you know, it's interesting. We need more people of color in education, all right?
Correct.
We certainly need more males as well. All right, and male persons of color would be the best thing in the world, okay, considering the demographics. And we're having trouble bringing them in there. Yet a lot of these folks want to become, the college graduates. And it's just brutal out there. I mean, it's so frustrating. It can make you crazy. And, of course, the salaries do have something to do with it. You can't go into debt and then take a low-paying job. All right, and have any of the? I'll ask you, Laura. Have any of the universities thought, because there's such a shortage of teachers, to just simply pay back students? You know, if they become teachers after 3 years, they'll pay all your debts, something like that. Has that happened, Lori?
Well, we're asking the SEAs and the State Departments and the locals based on some of the large national funding, you know, that's been available through the American Recovery Plan some of the COVID dollars, the ESSER funds, to really do the student loan or, you know, some of the stipends, scholarship opportunities so that it can offset some of those costs. And many of the models, like the teacher residency model or the alternative certification model, is really geared toward building that effective, diverse workforce by paying and offsetting their costs of their tuition, so that we can encourage more going into the field. So, you know, there are some strategies that are out there. We just have to get stronger from moving from information to implementation.
we're already paying a price for it. Brad, what about standards and accreditation? Are they too tough these days? What's going on? How do we help on that end? Brad Duncan.
I think there's just a shifting landscape going on there. So for a little background, CEC just celebrated their 100th anniversary, so that was a big deal this year. And at their inaugural meeting back in 19... Thank you. Thank you. I wasn't there.
You're welcome. I won't even get into that. I knew that. You're only 96, right? You missed the first 4 years, and I'm sure somebody has told you about those. Go ahead,
Just shy. So at that inaugural meeting, the founders of CEC identified that they wanted to establish professional standards as one of the primary aims of the organization. And so since then, they've worked on developing standards for the field. So CEC standards, the primary audience for those is going to be your higher education faculty and your preparation programs. So those are the college programs that are training your classroom teachers. CEC does have several sets of standards these days. We do have an initial and advanced set of standards for K-12 special educators. We just have a brand new set of initial standards for early interventionists and early childhood special educators. We have advanced standards for administrators and leaders in special education. Those are brand new as well, and we're really excited about those because those are our first set of non-teacher-centric standards. Those are more for your district administrators to help support our in-classroom special educators. And we also have initial and advanced standards for gifted educators. So it's really exciting as well.
Good. I like NAGC. I work with them a lot. I like the whole idea of teaching gifted kids well. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I also just wanted to throw out what the difference was between, because I've referenced initial and advanced standards. So Our initial standards are for your first-time special educator licenses. So those are your candidates. They could already hold a licensure in another area outside of special education, but we refer to that as an initial licensure within CEC. Your advanced licensure programs are going to be your additional special educator license. So with that being said, in the shifting landscape, so we started revising our standards to make them more practice-based, which means they're becoming less focused on your inputs, they're becoming less focused on so your candidate GPAs that are coming into the program, your SAT scores, that type of thing. Instead, they're going to be focused on documenting proficiencies that candidates are able to demonstrate by the time that they complete the program. So you're going to be looking at candidate work samples, your lessons plans, your portfolios, that type of thing. So you're going to really be looking at what candidates are able to do and kind of their output in the program.
Okay. So do you have more to say or do you want me to continue because I have so many questions? Brett?
Jump in.
Thank you, my friend. All right. I'm going to ask you an odd question. Okay, Brad. This is so weird. It's just making me nuts. What are we going to do about all this? Okay? And I mean that sincerely. We need people. All right? And how do we one of the things that should entice people to special education is this, that all special ed teachers go to heaven. Okay? That to me is something, you know, these are just wonderful people, and they have the patience of saints, all right? And how, with all the accreditation needs, okay, and these, what are we going to do to get more and more people in there? Because you can't even, you can't even pull from your population for the most part, because a lot of special needs students, okay, can't become special needs teachers. You know, somebody likes history, they become a history teacher maybe. Okay, but special needs is different. And how do we, I'm frustrated by it. How do we get the right people in there, people with a good heart, okay, who understand this stuff? What are we going to do, Brad? You can hear the frustration in my voice. Because all the things you're talking about are great, but we need people to follow up on this stuff.
Absolutely, and a lot of the people we see entering the field as candidates and as special ed teachers are actually touched somehow in their personal life. They have children that have special needs. They have nieces, nephews, siblings, something of that nature. So they're already kind of in that world when they decide to join into special ed. And then part of what we're trying to do with our standards and accreditation is really elevate the platform of special educators, really elevate how they're perceived by having these qualified, upstanding special educators in the classroom, and that way that they're a respectable force. That way, it's another approach for us to say that these people demand to be paid more, that they are earning their salary,
that they are smart
professionals, yeah, and really elevate that profession so more people are enticed to enter the field.
Are there and Laura, you can chime in here. Are there any districts who are saying, look, we need special ed teachers? There's more and more kids who need that, by the way, more and more kids on the spectrum, et cetera. Okay? Is any district, and I don't know, I never liked this before, but we're in dire need here. Are they talking about paying the special ed teachers more? I mean, it's a specialized field, no pun intended. Lori.
There's quite a few conversations taking place within the states across the nation regarding that, and I think that they understand that there has to be a higher level of compensation, as Brad just said, and we have to elevate the profession. And one way of doing that is showing that there is a good return on investment for those funds. And so many of the states right now are looking at even some legislative language around changing their criteria for the salary base, not just for special education or you know special education staff, but for all staff. Shortage with paraeducators as well.
Oh.
Shortage with specialized instructional support.
You're breaking up a little, Laura.
Oh,
you're
I'm just saying that they're. Oh, can you hear me now?
Go ahead. Yes, I can.
Okay. So many of the states are really looking at changing their salary base or some level of compensation. I think the concern that we have is that many of the states are not wanting to spend some of the federal funds on personnel, thinking that when the money goes away, what is the sustainability? Where, you know, we have to spend it on preparing the personnel so that they can, you know, potentially be retained within the system and that we do have a sustainable system of support over time. So it is an area the states are looking at right now.
I haven't asked this question. Maybe you guys know it, and I'll throw it to Lori, but if you want to talk, if you want to pass it to Brad, you can. We always talk about the need for special educators in K-12, pre-K-12, all right? What about professors? Are people still becoming professors in special education? Do we have enough people to prepare the people to become that? I'll throw it to Brad, and then Lori can answer if you want to. Brad, any thoughts on that one? Do we have enough professors?
I don't have a lot of data on that, but I do know that there are a lot of special education departments that are working with only one or two full-time faculty, and they're depending on a lot of adjuncts. So that's what I'm seeing in my personal experience when working with these programs.
And adjuncts might be teachers who are in the field working at a graduate level, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Well, Laura, your thoughts on that? Are there enough professors? Are there, you know, if you're raising the standards, okay, that means that these people have to be, you know, taught in a raised fashion, if I may. All right. Do we have enough professors going along with this? Lori?
Well, right now we do not have enough to meet the capacity needs. But the challenge becomes if we don't feed the pipeline and develop a pipeline of effective educators, we're not going to have future administrators. We're not going to have those that had some field experience that would be interested in going on for master level or doctoral level preparation within the university programs to then become, you know, the faculty, whether they are adjunct or the full-time faculty. So in the absence of having a pipeline, we're going to see less people that will be in the system that will be moving into, like I said a minute ago, both administration and higher ed.
Well, boy, it's just so darn frustrating, okay? And it's such a vicious cycle. And the problem is we need more and more and more people. It's just, well, yeah, actually talk about that for a second. Lori, how many more, what's percentage, whatever, kids are in special ed than 10 years ago? I mean, the number's much higher, right?
The numbers are increasing, and certainly there is a little bit of concern of the potential implications of COVID, the high referrals because of perceived, you know, lack of appropriate instruction and, you know, whether or not they would qualify for special education, the long COVID symptoms and looking at eligibility under special education for some of those. So there has been an increase in the number of students found to be eligible, and we anticipate that there will continue to be referrals for special education as a result of the pandemic. So more students coming in, but less staff, you know, available to meet their specialized needs.
Wow. Brad, talk about how schools and programs are going to use these new CEC standards. I mean, it's got to get out there, and we've got to make something happen. Just talk about it. What are you hearing from the district?
I did also want to circle back that it's important to note that there's so many volunteers that CEC is relying on. So we're relying on a lot of these college faculty. We're relying on a lot of these people out in the field, the professionals, to help us with our work that we do as, you know, a nonprofit organization. So as we're revising our standards, we're depending on these content specialists from the field. So they're all volunteers. They're putting in a lot of hours. So every time we revise a set of standards, we're asking a group of volunteers to contribute a significant amount of time and expertise in developing that process. So I just wanted to make sure that we touched on that real quick, that there's
thank
also
you.
That pool on the field.
Thank you.
But in terms of so how we're using the standards, CEC's main mechanism for evaluating a program using our standards is going to be through a process called national recognition. And that is a process that we partner with the Council for the Accreditation of Educator Preparation on. So CAPE for short, if people know that.
Yep, sure.
That's currently our only mechanism that we can formally evaluate against. So programs are able to use them on their own. They're able to incorporate the standards into their program. But the only way that right now that we can evaluate is through that partnership. So that means CAPE is an accreditor of a unit. So that means that all of the education preparation programs at a university have to go through it together. So that's your math education, your science education, all your other education programs are going through. So your special ed program, in this sense, is linked to those other programs. So you can earn national recognition through us, but your accreditation process is really going to be contingent upon whether or not all those other programs are successful and are able to meet CAPE accreditation. And in those states where accreditation is optional, it could be that the other programs aren't interested in pursuing that unit-level accreditation from CAPE, so a special ed program doesn't have any options. So CEC has decided to launch an accreditation process on our own. So it's a big undertaking. And our hope with that is not to really be a competitor in the field against any of the other educator prep programs out there, but we really want to provide an avenue for special educator programs to be able to seek accreditation on their own. And that way they can use CEC standards and they can use that status to elevate themselves. So CEC is arguably one of the largest and most influential special educator organizations out there. And
without
so
question,
we hope that we're able to leverage our knowledge and expertise and really elevate that piece if programs would opt into that accreditation process. So we've been developing that for about 2 years now, and we're really excited that actually today the application is opening. So your application for eligibility to kind of enter the process.
And if you enter the process, what is the process?
We're trying to keep it pretty closely aligned to the national recognition process that most people would be familiar with the CAPE accreditation process. So our standards are all designed for a program to be able to use 6 to 8 key assessments. So a key assessment is an assessment that all of your candidates in the program would be taking. So you would enter the application for eligibility, and that's really just a stepping stone for staff to review your program, make sure you're actually a special educator program, you fit into the CEC world of special education, and that we're not setting you up for failure, that you actually have the resources and ability to meet the CEC accreditation standards. We have developed an accreditation commission, who is our governance body for the accreditation process. We've developed some an outline of what programs would be asked to do and achieve. That's all available on our website right now. And then you would submit your program report with your 6 to 8 key assessments. There's an opportunity to provide additional information on how your program meets each of the standards. And then it's a peer review process as well. So our entire accreditation commission is volunteer, and we'll have trained volunteer reviewers that review the reports. And it's all done virtually, and that's in an effort to keep the price down for programs.
Yeah. Wow. That's a lot, man. That's a lot. All right? I got it. Woo! That's incredible. Brad, I have to ask you, you're Director of Professional Standards and Accreditation over at CEC, a great organization. I have to ask, to get a title like that, I'm not being funny when I'm saying that, what is your background? It's very interesting what you have to do. I don't know how you're even trained for it. What's your background? That's amazing.
Sure.
I'm serious.
It sounds like
I'm asking you for a job interview. I'm not. I'm just really curious. Yeah.
I did my undergrad work in psychology and sociology. I am not a licensed educator, so I will throw that out there that I'm mostly your process person. And I've worked in universities, I've worked in programs, things in admission, that type of thing. And then in a previous, I worked for another national accreditor who works very closely with CEC. And so I gained a lot of my knowledge there of how accreditation works. I got to see what works, what doesn't work, what programs we're struggling with. And then from there, I was kind of tapped to hop over to CEC to help build their accreditation process.
Cool. How long have you been there?
I just celebrated my second anniversary.
Well,
so I started right before the pandemic.
That and the 100th. Okay, so that's incredible. All these anniversaries coming up. Congratulations, but it's really an interesting job. All right. And especially in this day and age, all right, I'm really impressed with that. I got to tell you, it's just amazing. But I am just concerned that we're not doing enough, you know, to get teachers. We see the trend that colloquial we, okay? But we're not doing enough of, not you guys, okay? But as a whole, the country isn't doing enough about it. They look at it and they still moan and groan if teachers want to get paid a decent salary, all right? And that's not fair, all right? When we should have learned that during the pandemic. I just don't understand. Have you guys given any thought? I'll throw this one to Lori, see if she likes this one. Lori, have you guys ever given any thought to starting CEC University? Where you actually teach the courses with all your contacts and everybody you know, all these experts in the field, like Phyllis Wolfram, my good friend from Case, okay, they become professors, adjunct professors, and they teach a couple of courses online. Okay, everybody's into online these days, and suddenly people get a special ed degree from CEC University. You're welcome to steal this idea. What do you think, Laura?
Well, I don't think CEC will take over the training piece of it, but we do have the Teacher Education Division, TED, which is made up of the faculty from the Institutes of Higher Ed. So we work very closely with them on their level of programming, the changes, you know, embedding the standards, their assessments, some professional development opportunities. You know, we also work closely with the American Association of Colleges for Teacher Education, which is really a leading, AACTE, you know, they're really the leading. Yep, they're the leading voice on the educator preparation. Work very closely in collaboration with institutes of higher ed as well as the state departments and the local education agencies. So, you know, we're doing a lot of internal collaboration and we're doing a lot of external collaboration. We also work very closely with the Cedar Center here at CEC, and they're with the University of Florida. And they work very hard on building capacity of state personnel preparation systems that are really going to help teachers. And they do the trainings around the high leverage practices. And Larry, you've probably heard of those, but I just want to put in another plug with Brad and his standards. Because the standards became project-based, they also have an alignment to the high leverage practices. So you'll see that there will be training in the IHE programs and preparation for the high leverage practices around assessment, instruction, social, emotional, and behavioral, and then the collaboration. Yeah. And then the locals will be able to continue that level of preparation when the candidates leave the pre-service and come into the local. So we've got a continuum of support going now, which we didn't necessarily have in the past with these new standards, which is very exciting. So we're working closely with the organizations that are providing training around implementing those high leverage practices, so the candidates coming out have continued support.
Lori, who is there any particular? I'm asking this not to show favoritism. Is there any particular school, university, however you want to say this, state, whatever, that's doing it right, and that they're not having trouble getting special ed teachers or training people in a program that's actually working and increasing, all right, the amount of candidates, et cetera, okay? Is there anyone that comes to mind that's doing it exactly right? And, Brad, if you want to chime in on this one, you can, but I'll throw it to Lori. Who's the shining star?
Yeah, well, three states, you know, come to mind, not that like singling out states, but Georgia, Georgia, Mississippi, Arizona, they're very involved in the Cedar Center. So they have great cross-stakeholder collaborative activities going with real implementation of their innovative practices. So, you know, some Grow Your Own, really strong induction and mentoring supports, again, between the IEGs and particularly the LEAs. So, you know, there's some states that are doing some great work. We're going to be highlighting Georgia here real soon about their alternative certification program they have, and that is really taking career changers, you know, that want to come into special education and helping with with some preparation. So, you know, we've got some states that are doing some exemplar modeling. We just have to build capacity across the nation of what we know is currently working.
Right, I will say those states again. They deserve credit: Georgia, Mississippi, and Arizona. Okay, we have to do. If they're doing well with this, we have to duplicate and get the word out.
Correct.
Okay, on that, because that is, you're welcome to bring them on. Okay, when we do our next show, okay, they can talk about all the wonderful things they're doing. Brad, you pick the same ones.
Yeah, I would defer to Lori on that one. She has a much better pulse on what's going on in the field than I do.
Larry, they are going to be presenting as their exemplar models in the 12-part webinar series that CEC and CEDAR are going to be rolling out in April. And we hope on the next podcast we have an opportunity to really dig deep into what that will be offering, the different topics that we will be training. And we have 12 different national organizations partnering with us on the development and implementation. So excited about that.
When's that going to break out? Do we need to do a podcast in early April on that? Is that the best time?
Yeah, probably. It's toward the end of April.
We have the first week or so of April to get this done.
Okay.
I'll write you guys today and we'll get that together. Okay, and that's just great. And please feel free to bring them on.
Okay.
The entire state, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi. Okay? Entire state here. Yeah. All right, because my favorite place in the whole country is Sedona, Arizona. Okay? My wife's going down to Mississippi for a vacation to visit her friend, and I have nothing to say about Georgia, except I'm glad we beat the Falcons. I'm not New England Patriots. Okay? That's great stuff, and I want to highlight the good work those states are doing. That is just fabulous. So, Brad, let me finish this up. What's the next step for you regarding all this? Where do we go from here? Brad?
I think it's going to be a continuous process. So as we are developing our accreditation process, we're going to continually listen to the field, and we're going to refine our processes. So we're asking programs to be in a process of continuous improvement and refining their programs to be better and better. We're going to be doing the same thing. So as we're getting feedback about our process, we are going to be making changes. We're going to be making it better and helping out programs the best that we can. The last plug that I have, I guess, is that we just revised our practice-based standards for the preparation of special educators. This is an update to what many CEC members and constituents know as the Red Book. We changed the color to purple. A lot of people are upset about that. A lot of people are really happy about it. It's really to signify a change. So the revision now includes supporting explanations, knowledge bases as to why the standards development group selected the standards and components the way they did. And it also includes more resources to help guide programs really to use those standards that were not included in the previous edition. So that is now available for order on our website as well.
And that, the purple book, by the way, and was it? I have to bust this. It's a riot. So Republicans were mad when you changed it from red book, and the Democrats were still mad because you didn't make it the blue book. Okay,
now bipartisan.
I wanted it to be turquoise, Larry, but I didn't win.
Oh my God! Just a riot. Okay, for goodness sakes. Right, we have gone crazy in this country. We have gone nuts. I have to tell you, in this country, we've gone crazy. Okay, so we're down to purple book, everybody. Okay, not the turquoise book. Okay, which would have stood well for Native Americans. I have all my turquoise. That's just a ride. That's great. Everything's on the website at cec.org. That is hysterical. Yep. All right, what can I tell you? This is a great organization, and these kids that they work with. All right, I'm always astounded. I was a teacher, okay, and I taught social studies, and believe me, I lost patience very quickly, all right? And I always am astounded at the goodness and the wonder of being a special ed teacher. I think it's special ed because they're special. I got to tell you, it's just, it's amazing, and we can't let these kids down. So that's where we are these days. Brad, Lori, this was great. I hope you enjoyed yourself on a Monday morning.
Yes, thank you, Larry. We're glad to be here.
Well, it's my pleasure indeed. Absolutely. Brad, good to meet you. Pleasure. Glad you had a good time.
You as well.
And, thank you, my friend. And we'll good job with the purple book. I like that. And we'll get another one together for the beginning of April. Thank you, guys. You take care. Have a good week.
All right. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you. You too.
Bye. Brad Duncan, everybody, and Louis Vanderplug, and they are from CEC, CEC.org, Council for Exceptional Children. What can I say? Just go over to the website. You know what they do. It's just astounding how deep this goes and how important it is right across the board. All right, so please check it all out. right? And we're going to archive this show over at ace-ed.org, and I think we'll put it up on seltoday.org as well. If you haven't been there, check it out. We always are putting new stuff up there. It's good. Okay, seltoday.org. And ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.